92% of households that start the year with Peloton are still active a year later.
92% because of a bike?
Not just bikes. We also make treadmills and rowers.
Oh, let me guess, for elite athletes only, right?
Nope. It doesn't matter if you're an avid exerciser or new to working out. Peloton can help you achieve your fitness goals. 92% stick with it. So can you. Try Peloton bikes, tread, or row risk-free with a 30-day home trial. New members only. Not available in remote locations. See additional terms at onepeloton.com/home-trial.
Welcome to Season 4 of The Agile Brand with Greg Kilstrom, where we discuss business agility through customer experience, employee experience, and digital transformation. I'm your host, Greg Kilstrom. The Agile World podcast is brought to you by Tech Systems, an industry leader in full-stack technology services, talent services, and real-world application. For more information, go to techsystems.com. To read more about the topics discussed on this show, you can go to my website at gregkilstrom.com and read my latest articles or get a copy of my latest book, Meaningful Measurement of the Customer Experience, now available on Amazon and other retailers. My name is Greg Kilstrom, and I'm the host of the Agile Brand Podcast. Today, we're going to talk about the importance of understanding your customers, as well as how to find ways to meaningfully scale your business while remaining successful. To help me discuss this topic, I'd like to welcome Tyler Sully Sullivan, an entrepreneur and e-commerce email marketing expert and CEO of BombTech Golf. Tyler, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
Yeah, looking forward to talking with you. So why don't we start by you giving a little background on yourself and what you're currently doing?
Yeah, I'm an accidental entrepreneur. I still feel weird calling myself that, but really I'm not a good employee and started my own golf brand, BombTech Golf, in 2012, really with zero expectations. You know, I was competing in a niche sport called World Long Drive, which is like home run derby of golf. And it was a pure passion play. It was just assembling clubs myself by hand and made a really, really terrible website. I mean, back in 2012, 13, it was a little harder to make a website. And I made a really bad one and sold nothing. And my friends made fun of me and whatever. I was just bored with my day job. And one day, I'll never forget, I was on my boat, which was not a yacht, on Lake Champlain in Vermont, and I got an email, and it was a sale. And that was my aha moment of like, how did that happen? I'm on a boat, not at work, and I made money. And yeah. I said, let's just do more of that. And really, it's a story of me seeing traction in certain areas and just trying to do more of what works. And, you know, I was fortunate with timing. And I did work a ton, like literally 20 hours a day, 7 days a week, doing all the wrong stuff, but somehow find some of the right stuff for us, which was Facebook and Facebook ads when they came out. And that allowed us to scale to last year. We just kissed 10 mil, just maybe a hair under with two employees. And I have another company that I started again by following traction with my first employee, called Ecom Growers, where we help other brands like BombTech with their email. So we've got two companies now. I'm working less than I ever have. And it's a crazy ride. You know, it's been 9 years for me, so it's not like an overnight success. But I just did something I loved, made a bad website, built an audience, and it was a slow burn and had some fun along the way.
Wow, that's great. That's exciting. I'm looking forward to diving in here. As our first topic here, let's talk about the importance of having real conversations with customers and potential customers. So what are companies missing out when they aren't having real meaningful conversations with their customers?
I mean, that's been at the core of BombTech and my success. And really, I think any direct consumer brand that doesn't take the time or effort to have conversations, it defeats the whole purpose, right? So like when I would post a question on Facebook or more specifically an email, which is like a big revenue channel for us, you know, people would reply and it would open up real conversations for our customer service team who are in-house and they're golfers. And it built real relationships. And a good example of this was, and this is kind of when I first realized the power of conversations versus just like trying to push a message instead of being, yeah, you know, a regular conversation, was I think video first came out on Facebook and I hit a ball into a net and it sounds like a bomb goes off. And I said, does your driver sound like this? And I got, I think, 10,000 comments, 300,000 views on like $300 boost back then.
Nice.
And I don't know why, but I literally on my BlackBerry, not to date myself, commented on every comment until my thumbs were legit bleeding. Just because I saw engagement there and wanted to know what they were thinking, like what made them comment, if they had something to say, even if it was something not great, I would just say, thanks for your comment. And it really slowly built, you know, almost these one-to-one relationships at scale. And now we do that more in email, which is like, in my opinion, it's the same methodology, but it's more direct impact on the business. So like a good example of that is, let's say we have two products coming out that I think one's going to do well. I know nothing at this point. The customers tell me. So I'll say, hey, we're coming out with a 64 degree wedge and a chipper. Which one do you guys want, A or B? And I'm always wrong, which is great. and I thought A would win, and it's always B. And so when we ask them just, hey, let us know, reply back, and we'll get, I don't know the numbers, but it's like crazy, you know, like 10,000 replies. And we can just tag those like, okay, we got 80% want B. Well, guess what? We're going to launch B. So it's almost like, and I think that's the core of the whole strategy. It's like, you could say, let's have a conversation, but unless you actually care and want to have the conversation, you know, that's the missing link to the strategy. You can't just be like, hey, let me throw in an email, a question so that someone replies and goes in the inbox. That defeats the purpose. You have to overall actually give a shit and care about your customers and what they want to make the strategy work over time.
Yeah, well, and to follow on to that, and I mean, I think your example illustrates this, but just to dive a little deeper with that, how do you kind of figure out how to make something that feels more conversational at scale versus, you know, obviously, you know, responding to 10,000 comments every time you send something out isn't tenable, especially as your business scales and there's more than that, and, you know, and so on and so forth. So how do you distinguish, you know, between something that may fall flat and may not feel conversational versus something that will engage and that customers ideally will find engaging?
Yeah, we try to do it by what I think our biggest levers are. And we do invest in team to reply to almost every message we get. Comments in 2022 seem to be less valuable than they used to be. So really it's our, what we consider our owned asset, which is our email and SMS list. So like we put all of our effort in terms of not just replying with, you know, thought out real, you know, problem solving and real candid replies in email, you know, but we also want to do it fast. So that's really the channel where, and again, it's because we own that channel, right? So like Facebook, the comment section in 2013 was much more authentic and valuable to us. Now it's, we will scan if there's like a big issue or, you know, an actual customer service issue, but email and SMS to us is the core most valuable place to engage. Or on social, we do have our own private group, which are actual owners that we will engage with. So it just shifted a little bit, you know, agile, you know, things change. And for us, you know, it's all about first party data now. So email is one of those channels, which is pretty interesting because not only is it, you know, direct, it's more intimate, but it drives a ton of revenue, you know? So it's like that in the end day is our biggest asset.
When did you start seeing that shift with, you know, kind of away from social media comments and towards email and SMS? Was there, you know, was there a point in time where it really started changing?
I don't know if there's a clear like cutoff day where we're like, this is just not having an impact. I'm sure there was that conversation with the team. I don't recall the exact date. I think it's when I'm old and been doing this a while, so it's like this stuff seems a long time. I think it was 2016-ish because overall organic reach and revenue had dropped quite a bit. And I think, although we do get a lot of engagement comments still, I think that was the time where we just said, okay, you know, from a hierarchy of like tasks to do for the team, email number one, email, phone, SMS, 1, 2, 3, right? And speed to those is the core. If we have time, we'll do, you know, comments, but it's a nice to do, but not a necessary to do. And we did go through the process of like, you know, there's companies that will actually comment on every comment. And I did a test to just do that for like a month where I literally hammered every comment for a while on social, and it seemed to have no impact. So that was not a probably a thorough test, but you know, it's more of like, okay, emails are on us. These comments may just be people that are feeling like they want to engage, and it's not a real, it wasn't as real as it used to be. And again, this may be me oversimplifying it, but yeah, I think it was 2016-ish where we just went all in on owned assets versus platform.
So for other companies that want to achieve the same results, I mean, it sounds like even, you know, some of it may be slightly anecdotal, but there's a lot of quantitative measurement and I'm sure qualitative measurement as well. You know, so in other words, you've been measuring what effects these things have pretty regularly. Like, is that the starting point for this? Or like, how would somebody else start down this path?
I mean, I think it's pretty simple. I think number one, it's a mind shift, right? So like, are you actually wanting to hear from customers? If you're not, don't do it. And a lot of owners may say, hey, I don't want to get feedback and don't want to get replies, and they're probably not going to make it long term. So I think you have to ask yourself if you want to do it. And truly, do you feel that your customer feedback is something you'll act on? And if not, maybe you shouldn't be in business. But that's the reality. Some people want to be transactional and push messages, and this would not work. So I think that's number one. And number two, it's simply, if you've been using email, SMS, and social to just push your, you know, your best sale, your best deals, it will take time, because you're going to have to almost retrain your audience that you care and you want to ask questions. So you can't just simply be like, guess what, guys, we've been blasting the shit out of our list with newsletters and promos that no one cares about for 5 years, and now we're just going to start engaging with them. You know, so it's,
you
can do that, but it's going to take some time for them to be like, whoa, they're asking me a question. I kind of, for me personally, it's just something that was at the core because I was curious and wanted to know what they wanted from day one. So it was just part of the brand. So I think it depends on mentally if you want to do it. And then there will be, you know, a transition where people may be like, whoa, I'm not used to this. And we send a lot of plain text emails that are just like, hey, really appreciate you. You know, 2021 was a massive year, biggest year ever. Thank you so much for your business. You mean so much. With and that's it. And so like, some brands are like, what do you mean? They just can't even fathom that as an email. And I'm like, well, and another way to think about it, I think it's like, if you send an email to me or to your friend, are you making a overly designed newsletter with 10 call to actions to send to your buddy? No,
right.
You send a plain text like, hey man, what's up Friday? You want to get some beers? So like, we're trying to be native to the platform. Not that we don't do branding, you know, branded emails and, you know, selling, but we mix in a lot of real, like authentic plain text and just conversations. And it just overall maintains a much healthier dialogue and that asset.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like, you know, there's kind of a commitment that you need to make on two fronts. I mean, one, you, to your point, is this approach that you're taking may not overnight lead to, you know, instantaneous success or something, but over the long run, it does build relationships and it builds a dialogue. And then, you know, I think the second thing is when people give you feedback, they don't necessarily expect it to be implemented, but they expect to be heard, right? Or felt like they're heard, right? So like making that the commitment that, you know, when the 20% of people vote for something that isn't the most popular thing, that those people still feel like, okay, well, you know what, you know, they heard my feedback, and even though my pick didn't win, they still are willing to give feedback next time. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, that's really all it is the reality that you care and they are being heard in any capacity. That's so much more than most brands are willing to do. and like the baseline for engagement and also customer service, which everyone's like, yeah, we got great customer service, but really it's all terrible. You know, then it's like, you know, it's just going in with all of this with the attitude of do the unexpected and wow them. Like, that's why, like, at least my in-house guys, you know, I don't at any level manage what they do, and I've given them free rein to wow customers. And I had to do that personally because as the owner, you know, especially early days, I would cringe if I had to send out product for free or refund shipping, even if it's the customer's fault, you know, or not the customer's fault, or even if it's our fault or anyone's fault, I would just be like, man, that's going to cut the P&L. And when I totally freed myself from that activity, you know, number one, they did a better job. Number two, customers were happier. And really, the P&L and the EBITDA was higher because customers were so much happier versus the micro approach of like, oh, man, well, we can just get away with, you know, giving them a small discount because of this happened. So it's just, I don't know where I'm going with that. But like overall, any channel or any opportunity you have to talk with someone, just try to make them happy and wow them, you know, and that's it. And for me, I had to get out of the way. I'm really, at the end of the day, I'm the problem with everything. So I just get out of the way and don't do anything because I just I have a process for each thing, try to find people smarter than me, which is very easy. And then just try to get out of the way. And then it usually works better.
Well, that, I mean, that kind of, that's actually a good segue to the next topic I wanted to talk about, which is, you know, just how you've been able to scale your business with, you know, without a huge staff and all of those kinds of things. So, you know, I mean, I think, you know, mentioning that approach of giving people freedom and autonomy to do what needs to be done, you know, is certainly one aspect of that. What are some of the other things that you, that have enabled you to be able to scale so well without, you know, having so much overhead and infrastructure and all that kind of stuff?
For me, it may be different than others, but it, you know, I had two kids in my 9 years. And when I first had my first child, I was working 20 hours a day, 7 days a week with a newborn, and it was unhealthy for everyone. And that's because I was doing everything and didn't know what I was doing. And then for me, you know, so it's life events. When I had my second child, you know, I think it was like 3 years later, you know, I was in the office a ton still, had guys, had an office, you know, was there grinding all the time. And then I was like, business is going well. I'm going to take some time off. Like, my wife deserves it. My kids deserve it. So I took 6 weeks off and sales went up. And that was my life event epiphany where I was like, shit, I'm not that important. I'm useless. A lot of my day doing tasks that felt important really weren't big levers. And it was painful in a sense that I felt like I lost a little control and importance, but it allowed me to scale far higher, lean the team up, and really get out of the day-to-day business, which, you know, is so hard as a small business owner. And, you know, even if it's early on, I mean, that was year 6 or 7 for me. So I had the kid thing, the kid pressure, and that one moment where I was like, wow. You know, so I don't know if you could tell anyone, if you told me back then before my second kid, like, hey, you could do the same business and drive more revenue and work less, I'd say you're wrong. Because I'm the owner, I know everything, I'll do it better than anyone. And in reality, that wasn't true. So a lot of these, like, you know, the 4-hour work weeks and stuff, that, like, people may not want that or can do that because they're mentally, I think it's a lot of limiting beliefs and what you really, your mind is at. But for me, that was the mind shift where I was like, wow, what am I doing? So for me, a lot of times I don't have a lot of stuff to do. Like, I don't have any day-to-day like tasks to do in the business other than approvals of our agencies and experts once a week. So sometimes I'm like, okay, I guess I'll go golfing again. You know, so,
right.
So it's a hard thing to complain about. But it did free me up to help my first employee launch the other business, Ecom Growers, which is a very different business to scale. It's a service-based business. You know, we're much younger, 3.5 years deep. We are a platinum Clayview agency, which just means we're like top, I don't know, 10 with revenue managed. But we're small. You know, we got like 30 plus clients. We got like 8 employees. And it's a more human intensive business to scale up, and it's been challenging. So that is a very different, so there are two different businesses completely. Yeah. E-commerce is, if you want it to be, you can scale much easier because more of a function of paid traffic and having those experts, you know, which has been great, but it's heavier on cash flow, right? It's harder to, you need more capital. Right. And then the agency is great for cash flow, right? And doesn't have really any inventory, but it's much harder to scale that business. So they all kind of have their pros and cons. And, you know, I just like working on stuff where, you know, my impact has, you know, it is a bigger lever, you know what I mean? And that's the stuff I like to work on, which isn't day-to-day tasks per se. So it's like, that's where I'm at with stuff, is like the bigger rocks to move that are maybe more difficult, but if you move them, you know, you get to these bigger opportunities and bigger growth.
Yeah. I mean, I can definitely empathize with, you know, several years back before I sold my agency, I was definitely one of those people that would have been very skeptical if you told me I could, you know, make more money and work less and all those kinds of things. You know, I think there is a, you know, some of it's good. I mean, you know, as an entrepreneur, you have to believe in yourself and your own abilities, but it can all, it's a double-edged sword, right? It can also make you kind of blind to other types of logic and reason and all manner of other things. But, you know, you touched on this already a little bit, but, you know, as kind of a final thing here before we wrap up, like, what do you think would get through to someone that is just kind of like either myself or yourself, you know, as you were describing earlier on, like, what do you think would get through to show somebody that there might be a slightly different way? Like maybe a 4-hour day or 4-hour work week even is, you know, is not possible or whatever, but what's a way to start thinking about this as a, you know, as a baby step, let's say.
I don't know if I've cracked that code for other people, to be candid, but I this is an exercise my partner and I do weekly, where he's in the business at the agency, you know, doing the tasks, right? And every week we have a call, and it's essentially, he tells me all the important stuff he thinks he's doing, and I say it's useless. And it's a limiting belief breakdown, essentially, where he thinks this task has to be done by him or in this certain way. And we always go through and try to make it an SOP that anyone, excuse me, that anyone can follow. So really, we take the things that you think can't be handed off to free you up to do more important things. And we just make Loom videos. We're like the kings of Loom video, where take something that you think is difficult to hand off. We just, I'm not in the business specifically, so I can say, I don't know what you're saying, make it simpler. Then I say it again, it does make it simpler, and I can say it again. And so then we get to a point where even I, not being in the day-to-day of the business, and can come in and do that with the assistance of a Loom video, therefore allowing him, you know, who's like, should not be doing any day-to-day stuff in like the sending or designing, but it's easy to get roped in and jump into the doing because it feels important and tangible. So I don't know. I think that's something that we've worked on, and it's taken us probably as a partnership, it's evolving, but it's been a year and a half of us having these talks. But every time we have a really difficult talk about, like, you know, his day-to-day job, we have some breakthrough that frees him up, makes the company more efficient, better training, therefore we can scale more. So it's like, depends on the business, depends on the person. And I think you need someone there to say, dude, why are you doing that? It's almost like I don't know if I'd be called the coach of not doing tasks, but that's essentially what I do. And it's so easy as the owner to be like, oh, I'll just do this real quick. And then I'll do this real quick. And then you're doing all this bullshit that actually isn't a big lever, but made you feel important in the day for that day. So it's a tough thing, you know?
Yeah. No, I think that's great. Well, Tyler, thanks so much for joining the show. For those listening, what's the best way for them to keep up with you and what you're doing?
Yeah, so if they golf, it's bombtechgolf.com is the brand. And then if they're an agency, if you know, selling anything direct consumer, the agency's ecomgrowers.com. We do email and SMS marketing, so we just drive more revenue with email. And then LinkedIn, I've been fairly active, not sure why, but just having fun on there. Tyler Sully Sullivan on LinkedIn.
Wonderful. Well, again, I'd like to thank Tyler Sully Sullivan, entrepreneur and e-commerce email marketing expert and CEO of BombTech Golf, for joining the show.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to The Agile Brand with Greg Kilstrom. Talk with you next week.
Thanks again for listening to The Agile Brand with Greg Kilstrom podcast, brought to you by Tech Systems. If you enjoyed the show, please take a minute to subscribe on your podcast channel of choice and leave us a rating so that others can find the show more easily. You can access more episodes of the show at www.theagilebrand.show. To get a copy of my latest book, Meaningful Measurement of the Customer Experience, visit my website at gregkilstrom.com. Until next week, stay agile.